The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Yo, what's up, Twin Cities? Welcome. Welcome back. Welcome to another episode of Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy. Wow, that track. You talk about nostalgic. I got stories for that song as a part of the soundtrack from the Breaking movie. Hard to believe that movie came out in 1984. Shout out to all the B-boys and B-girls who came up there, grandparents now. Right. teaching their children, their children's children, you know, about, you know, one element of hip hop that's alive and thriving. And that is the breakdance, the element of breakdancing, the dance element for sure. I have stories. I remember when that movie came out and it premiered it was at the Skyway Theater when that was a theater. Most of y'all go to the Skyway
now. Wow.
To listen to live music. It's a music venue now, but it used to be a movie theater, right?
And
it was nice because it had like four theaters in one. It was new and a different type of vibe right next to across the parking lot from covered parking lot from Musicland, right there on Hennepin Ave, the Breaking movie at Skyway Theater.
What year?
1984.
Oof.
And cats were breakdancing in the Skyway on the way up because it was long waiting. There was a line waiting. I had to go upstairs and around through the venue. And I remember we were popping and locking. Battles were breaking out in the line. So this is the anniversary. That movie was released, I believe, according to Today in Hip Hop History, according to that site, which I get a lot of information from. That movie came out this past weekend in 1984.
Okay.
Electric Boogaloo. You remember that? Mr. Buckner, are you too young?
No.
You were just a short.
No, I'm not too young. I know these. We are right there. And no, this is, I'm having a slight flashback and a panic attack at the same time.
For real. Who would have thought years would go like that? But that was a flick. Man, and that was a new thing when that movie came out. It was a little corny. There were corny elements.
It was corny.
Definitely corny, but that lead song right there, and then a song I'll play a little later in the show, you know, it was the beginnings of, at least in the Twin Cities, I'm sure things have been happening a little bit. New York got a head start, for sure. Yeah. You know, it didn't take very long, as I've mentioned, on several occasions for hip hop. And at that time, it was just called rapping. Ain't even had the term hip hop. It wasn't even being used, right? And breaking really came from locking, which was something else. That kind of preceded breakdancing, locking. We saw the Cholos doing that in L.A. Mm-hmm. We saw that on What's Happening, right? Television shows, locking. That was a dance vibe that wasn't entirely hip-hop or breakdancing. It was something else. It was the up rock that eventually was a critical piece. But yeah, anyway, celebrating
popping, locking, dropping. I'm trying to visualize all those terminologies.
And we didn't have internet. We barely had TV, right? We only had regular stations. I don't know. There might have been a little bit of cable back then. There was some cable, but, you know, nothing like today. So it was word of mouth. It was, you know, there were a couple movies that were made. You know, Beat Street came out as well. But, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was like early crossover music, like meaning crossover genres. I ask that rhetorically too, because my cousin who lived down here, yes. When I was in elementary school, my cousin Nick, you met Nick.
Yeah, yeah.
He's one of the original 80s hair band. They didn't call it 80s then, but it was the 80s. They were running the original. He's one of the original hairball members, mm-hmm. playing guitar, singing, drums. And he came back home where I was from in northern Wisconsin. And he's like showing off his breakdancing moves and his parachute pants. And I mean, he was a long-haired rocker.
Mm-hmm.
But he was excited to show me these new moves, and then he showed me Michael Jackson's music video on MTV. Appeal.
Well, it was interesting. I think it was folks in the pop space or the rock space, kind of poppy, right? Top 40. Who had been introduced to breakdance. That's how, who was old girl? Blondie, right? Who was a part of some, or, you know, that saw this new phenomenon with kids spinning on their heads, on their backs, you know, something that was new, fresh, and interesting. And they tried to create notoriety or visibility by trying to bring it into these pop spaces. That's why, like, the breaking movie was a little corny, because it wasn't as it was necessarily showing up around the way in the hoods, right? That was a little more grit. But they had to market it in a manner where they downplayed the street aspect, right? But they always had someone in those movies like the Electric Boogaloo cat. Electric Boogaloo, I think, is the lead character, but the other cat was kind of more, you know, Boogaloo Shrimp. You're right. He was more the regular dude, right? And so, but it's interesting. Very, very interesting in history. And the more interesting thing is that I remember. That's how far back when I was a kid It was a minute ago. And
I mean, you bringing it back memories.
For real. For real.
Memories. Man.
Those are good times. You know, simpler times. I'm trying to remember. I was going through some of the archives, and I came across an interview we did, rest in peace, to Tretis, Disco T. I was locating that for someone. I sent it off. But we were talking about, in that interview, Moby Dicks, right? If you remember before, you know, the Target Center, that whole area now that is occupied by, what medical group is that? Where the, across the street from the Target Center. Was that Block E?
Yes,
exactly.
Yes, Block E.
So Block E, before Block E was Block E, it was some other things, including old dive bars, Schindler's. There's a row of businesses that were replaced eventually by Block E. And Tretis, Disco T, mentioned how he had cut a deal to spend at Moby Dick's when he first, you know, first arrived, or he would come back and forth from the Shy. So, but anyway, we like taking walks through memory lane, as well as creating memories.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. It's 50 plus years of history, of shaping the society, not just here in Minneapolis and New York, but across the globe. And we have to recognize the, you know, similar to the impact, the amazing impact of jazz and rock and roll and everything else, hip hop, which we cultivated, you know, through multiple ways. You as a B-boy and El Boog as...
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Fade out.
All right. Well, as we're waiting for for Mr. Buckner to come back on, you were saying, El Book.
You're right. Think about those grandparents, great grandparents, who were B boys and B girls.
Yes, very entertaining. A little segue.
It is. I think
right.
about.
You're right, though. Go ahead.
Like the local music, the local culture, and how it shapes and informs, but also vocalizes on behalf of what's happening in the scene of each city. Like Minneapolis, what came out of Minneapolis, what's still coming out of Minneapolis on that local scene through the words and the rhymes and the beats of the many artists here, especially my sister texted me, said Tall Paul came out with a song about ice. I mean, that brought him out of retirement, semi-retirement, and but the movement of local activism and the voice of our local artists on behalf of our communities, and Minneapolis being one, but like we look at NWA on the West Coast, right? And others. So it's intriguing to me as we dive deep into each week, the different artists from the different places across the United States and how they've helped shape not only hip hop, but cultures across the United States and in some ways our politics.
Life's complexities played out through art. It's kind of, you know, we shout out to Pete Lee from Bob Street, always. Keeping it moving. Sharon from his youth and a great archivist, historian of music. But he was talking about Kent State, what happened.
Yep.
And how that was 56 years ago, but we're still dealing with, who would have thought, you know, 50 years later we still would be dealing with, you know, these types of occupations or efforts to subject the citizenry to literally authoritarianism, right?
My dad used to play me that song. He used to play that song all the time, and you know, my dad was a younger Democrat out of Milwaukee. He went to Marquette for a little while. I've shared that story with you. He was at the DNC in Chicago, And he's been at, and he would tell me the stories of it, how he was, you know, part of that and hanging with the local Black Panthers. He was Red Man. He was, you know, a native guy. And those are his people, were the Black Panthers there in Chicago. And he'd hanging out with them, smoking, not cigs, and just watching it unfold and figuring out where they can play their part and activating their voice so that they can feel heard and mobilizing. And he would talk about it all the time, and he'd play a lot of music. But that song Pete Lee played, that was one of the songs he would play all the time when he would talk about those stories with me. Mm. And so I knew that they, you know, that was my dad's music for the era that he was looking to connect with, you know, culture, politics, passion, activism, and music for him. And that, and he carried that thread through to each of, you know, myself and my sisters.
Well, we're going to continue this walk through memory lane. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy here on KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, KFAI.org on the net, Fresh Air Community Radio. We'll be back, y'all.
Support for KFAI comes from The Fine Line, presenting a joint show from artists Maye and Ambar Lucid, Sunday, May 10th. In this emotionally raw live experience, the duo wants you to feel the power of intimacy on stage. Between Maye's alternative soul and Ambar Lucid's psychedelic pop, the two defy expectations and genres. Tickets and more information about Maye and Ambar Lucid can be found at first-avenue.com.
Running harder than a boiling kettle.
All right, welcome back, Twin Cities. Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy playing the classics tonight. MCA, a member of the Beastie Boys who passed this a minute ago now, 2012. Another important piece of hip-hop legacy and history that passed away too soon. But yeah, we'll be playing some music by the Beastie Boys. I was just thinking, you know, and it's funny, like when you're going through something in real time, you don't really get all the connective tissue. And I always saw Beastie Boys until I think they started going on tour with Run DMC. I always saw them as individual entities, right? Kind of appealing somewhat to different audiences, even though Run DMC really, you know, kind of that crossover with the rock beats, and we now know that a lot of that had to do with super producer Rick Rubin. But as I was going through the catalog, there are a lot of those beats, a lot of those break beats, early break beats that were living in a lot of different spaces, and also the Beastie Boys as really unique lyricists of the day had all the elements of hip hop and then brought in a real new element, and that was, you know, leaning into the rock music in a manner that kind of changed the cadence and the musicality of hip hop in a different way. And we see the evolution of that through different spaces. But anyway, it's always interesting curating these playlists and then lacing it up on Monday. Speaking of lacing it up, Anthony Edwards.
He's back.
He's going to be on the sideline. We don't know how much time. You know, the $6 million man, he's like $50 million man or whatever.
Yeah.
His numbers are extreme. I'm not sure. What's Anthony Edwards' contract? It's a nice contract, but he could be on the sideline
for this penny. Game.
For this game coming up. I don't know how they did it. They got through, you know, down multiple players. They got through Denver, handled themselves. Denver is going. They got a lot of soul searching. I don't know if Rick Adelman's kid is going to be there after this season. They may be trying to find someone else to replace him. Anyway, it was a less than very mediocre effort put forward by Denver, but we'll take
it. So who's starting?
It will probably be, that's a good question. Who start? Probably Mike Conley starts at point two, Terrence Shannon or Bones Highland. I think they started Shannon the other day.
They started Shannon.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to have Edwards start because if he plays at all, I mean, he's really kind of there for moral support. But I've seen him working. I've seen him in the pool. I've seen him. They had him shooting free throws the other day. I don't know how impactful he will be as a player on the court, but his presence alone and leadership and kinship with his teammates will be helpful and impactful. So
he could have did that in civilian clothes and just hold tight for at least one, if not two games.
You're right.
As you pointed out, this is our $50 million man. He is $48 million a year. Contract runs out after the 29th season. And this is, you know, we're getting now into the prime of the life and everything else. And you can't run the, I mean, it's already a risky thing, as we saw with Dante and his popped
Achilles.
You know, injury. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Achilles, which is he won't be back until what, mid next year at the earliest. You know, unless he does the Jason Tatum.
Or Aaron Rodgers.
It's his old documentary.
You know, also kind of, but yeah, to your point, it's a very serious injury.
Yeah, I don't think Dante is going down to South America to do, you know, the Aaron Rodgers treatment. So I think we're at the point where we got to be very careful about, you know, expending too much. And what I loved about their effort against Denver is they took it to them. They didn't stop. And you can tell when they took it to them, they were the much more they were the team that wanted it more. When they tried to outgun Denver, it really showed that we just don't have great shooters. But our will played out, and we beat them sound and clear. And now we're taking on a very young, very energized team with probably the greatest cheat code that you have in the game right now, with someone who is 7'4", 7'5", whatever he is.
7'6". I heard that from KG.
And has the handles of a freaking guard. That's just ridiculous.
He does. You okay if we spend a little time on this? I know you over there twiddling your thumbs.
We won't be much. It'll be there.
I'll put my timer on.
Okay. I had this conversation with someone earlier. I mean, Wimby is a freak of nature, right? He does, just like Giannis. But unlike Giannis, Wimby is kind of whimsy. I mean, he's a thin dude. And Rudy Gobert looks like he does a lot of reps on a regular, daily, in the weight room. And so even though, there's 2 year, 3-4 inches height difference, at that elevation don't really matter much, right? I think the strength alone is going to be interesting. And it's going to be interesting. We saw how Gobert played against a Joker. Right, where he used his physicality, to his benefit. Now Wimby's got more. We know he's got more tools in the toolbox by far. I mean, he can face up, crossover, dribble. So you know Rudy has shown previously to this year in the playoffs that he can, you know, he get in that little middle area. And he's like a deer in the headlights. He doesn't really necessarily know what to do, but he has shown improved on-ball defensive play. I'm curious. Do they run a double and with like a Naz Reid and body him up? I think they should body him up, you know? I mean, that's how they used to do it with Detroit back in the day. They need to take a page. They're already with their play, and I'm going to hand the mic over, but with their defensive play, is reminiscent of earlier eras. Very physical, unique of this time, from this time. So, thoughts? What do you think? Is it gonna? Well, how's this gonna play out?
I mean, I love your analysis, man. I think you're dead on about, you know, putting a body on him at half court. You know, let him know. And actually, I would even. You're right about the whole thing of putting, you know, up top and, you know, above the 3-point line, you know, putting someone else on him and allowing for Rudy to kind of float in and kind of deal with it. Here's the major question is who takes care of Castle and who takes care of De'Aaron Fox? If Jaden McDaniel has another great, you know, and aggressive series against De'Aaron Fox or Castle, you know, a lot of people are kind of writing this thing off because of, you know, San Antonio's, you know, celebrity and everything else. This is still the team that made the Western Conference Championship twice in the past couple years, and they added, you know, players. Okay. And with this emergence of IO and the young kids coming up and going deeper on the bench, I think this is going to go a little bit more, you know, different than what a lot of people think. So the question is, can you just hold Wimby in check? He's going to get his 25. He's going to get his 12. He's going to get a couple nice little plays. Crowd's going to go wild. They're going to beat the drum when they win and everything else. But can you just hold him in check? The only thing that I am worried about is the loss of Dante DiVincenzo, because he was your spark, not only your spark plug. That was a cat that played all 82 games. And the irony in the early part.
I know you're fading a little, B, but I agree. I think Dante clearly represented the identity of the Wolves, the edginess, you know, the little chippiness that they had that we now see coming through Jaden McDaniels, you know. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
Chips to their capability.
Yeah. I had to fill in because we couldn't hear you there for a minute. But you were saying, yep. Dante, we're in agreement. Dante represented the identity of the Wolves, the chippiness, the aggressive defensive play, and then, of course, being a sharpshooter, making the extra pass, just the chemistry that was developing and emerging over those first three games against Denver was impressive.
Yeah, just amazing. So we'll see what's up. I mean, and I got to do this real quick. Shout out to the Wild and that Wild game last night, 9-6, shootout, missing a couple people too. So, we're winning. We're back to Minnesota again. And, oh, shout out to the Minnesota Frost as well in the playoffs again. So go keep winning.
Go Wolves. Go Wolves. Let's take a quick break. Thank you for tuning in to Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy on another Monday evening, beautiful evening in Twin Cities. All right, Wolves, it's time to howl. Get out there. Get your fandemonium going. There we go. You listen to Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy or KFAI. We'll be right back, y'all.
Shank Subramaniam and Abhishek Raghuram, two masters of the South Indian tradition, flute and voice in concert, Friday, May 15th, 7:30 p.m. at the Preeminent Concert Hall at Normandale Community College, 9700 France Avenue, Bloomington. For further information, go to imsom.org. Co-sponsored by the Indian Music Society of Minnesota and KFAI Radio, 90.3 FM Minneapolis, St. Paul, and on the web at kfai.org.
If you can feel what I'm feeling, then it's a musical masterpiece. Hear what I'm dealing with, and that's cool at least. What's running through my mind comes through in my walk. Two feelings are shown from the way that I talk. And this is me, y'all. I am C, y'all. My name is MCA, and I still do what I please. And now I'd like to introduce what's up. I press the mic to D for a fistful of truth.
All right, Twin Cities, welcome back. Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy. Go Wolves. El Boog, you were mentioning earlier today some data that you came upon because your research is better, way better than my research. I don't know about you, Mr. Buckner. Maybe you think you got the best research, but I think out of the three of us, El Boog holds that title. You were just talking about the impact of a lot of things that have happened in the Twin Cities on the consciousness of the residents and, you know, how that's showing up in terms of activism and maybe how it's not in some other places. So some other parts of the state where, you know, the occupation of ICE didn't really impact some people, or at least they didn't seem to care as much as others did. Do you want to expand on that a bit?
It was more so a rhetorical question that came from an article read about what was the surge's impact or change on our local politics or state politics. And I was curious about it. And some of the themes that came out of it were more about, you know, the federal, you know, here's the themes that came from it. Federal versus local power. Authoritarian versus individual or community values. Mobilization changing a narrative. And did it change a narrative was really the question. Or did it deepen the resolve and change a narrative? So there were some rhetorical questions that came out of this discussion and that article, because it was the question I posed the statement I made was they underestimated our deep grassroots movements here in the state.
How the Twin Cities can level up, you know, as opposed to your question that you were leading into, and that is, was this the perfect testing ground, you know,
right,
for a divisive element to really kind of, you know, try to move the dial, you know, on a variety of issues
at different levels across our state,
you know, within the conservative agenda, right? Really, you know, I mean, there have been attempts. Are you on B? You listening?
I'm listening.
Okay.
I'm tracking.
Yeah, we just kind of, your signal kind of keeps fading in and out, but you know, Minnesota, you've mentioned this before, B, how the comb-over in chief, really, this is a trophy he wants. You know, he wants to turn this state in particular, amongst a few others, I'm sure, red. He wants to really see if he can chip away at the, progressive movement, the deeply rooted you know, DFL tentacles that continue to bring wins to Democrats. And, you know, there seems to be a fixation on his part on this particular area in particular. I don't know if I ever said that before, this particular
Keep going.
Anyway,
worked.
All right. Okay. Let me get to my point. You know, clearly there's an agenda, and we're right in the middle of it. And now there's, you know, a sociological analysis of you know, how we respond. So, yeah, I think that was a part of El Boog, where you were.
I was running by you as casual conversation that we have together when on our downtime. It's really romantic.
Hey, that's what makes the relationship stronger. I'm thinking about this. What do you think? You know, that's some beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing. But to y'all's point on this, yes. So if you look at, you know, again, I consider Donald Trump is the greatest hip hop president of all time, because he is nothing but gangster. And so I'm going to say it from this standpoint. He is trying to literally settle all past scores of the conservative movement, of the authoritarian movement, of, you know, again, he started out with this whole manifest destiny kind of approach, right. You know, this, he's going to complete the whole, we're going to dominate the Western Hemisphere and everything else. And, you know, yes, there are many people who across the globe, and specifically in the Western Hemisphere, who believe that was the right thing to do, to get rid of Maduro in Venezuela. But he left the rest of the regime there. So he didn't really change anything. He just took out the head guy and was like, you know, I'm going to take care of the rest, and nothing's changed. You know, I'm going to go after Cuba. I'm going to go after this group. I'm going to go, you know, it's the bully in the China shop at this point, the bull and the bully in the China shop. But now all of a sudden he's making a mess of things. He's trying to make a mess of Iran, because that was the whole thing with Jimmy Carter. He's trying to do what he needs to do, but not understanding how it works. And then you have I call it the conservative clown car posse. If you guys put the letters together, it spells out CCCP, which is the old, you know, the descriptor for the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
So where we're at right now is you have a very messy narcissist that is literally just making a mess of things. And this is not in the best interest of the world or the United States.
Yeah, but chaos is the point, is little pockets of chaos wherever they can. And I was listening to something over the weekend as well that was about the marketing chaos, the marketing strategy to change the conversation. That's the point. Even if they don't get a win, the point is to change the conversation within the area, whatever area they're targeting at the time. And if you think about changing the conversation, that means, you know those people in our lives that are really like drama, and they come in into the room and they drop a comment, or they pick a fight, or they disagree just to disagree to create chaos, because chaos follows them. That's just what they're about. And it changes the conversation, or it changes your feelings towards other people, because their viewpoints are exposed, or their thoughts about you are exposed. And that's the point. And if you think about their chaos agenda at every level, it is to create a division, and we're ground zero. And I've been really thinking about that, because their tactic is to divide and to break the party. And that's what they were doing in Hungary for a while. Even though Orban lost, there was a chaos campaign happening, and it's going to continue to happen to get people to be confused over what's real and what's not, to not understand who to believe, what to believe, and then to begin to battle each other.
Yes, to break the will, the spirit of the people. Authoritarianism only thrives in those types of environments. And, you know, in the aftermath of the pandemic, all the other complexities of, you know, decisions, political decisions, along with other things that we have faced, not just here in Minneapolis, but, you know, across the country, there seems to be an intention to lean in and take advantage of the weaknesses in society. And that is, you know, really having not fully recovered from the effects of the pandemic, from a mental health standpoint, consciousness standpoint.
Well, you remember when I was having a conversation, I was exploring, you know, what are some ways that I can get more involved in the party? And this was specifically, you know, or potentially city council. And that's when I met some GOP folks. They pulled me to the side, try to, like, you know, woo, woo, woo. And I'm like, nah, that ain't happening with me. I'm the wrong person. And it just was a really eye-opening moment for me, because I sat back down and I looked at Navigator. I'm like, man, they are bold. They tested me just to see if I can be swayed over with money or with, you know, support in some other way. And picking, that's, you know how gangsters do that and how other folks do that who hustle and folks. Yes.
They seek to groom
and
people.
Pick you off. Pick you off slowly. I was like, I am not the one, players. I am, you know, wrong person. You find somebody else. But my point is, it's so subtle, hyper-localized in a state that the urban core versus the rural area vote differently.
Very much so. Yep.
Yeah. And so there's all these interconnectedness of division that could potentially pop off if someone just kind of drops in a little bit of chaos. And it's really been, in my mind, I've been really thinking on this, because it really hurts when we start attacking each other. Yeah, sometimes over the same value.
That's real. But, you know, I think you cued me to play some more music, because you did the pop, pop, and drop. So.
I was doing that on purpose.
I'm going to take that as,
I said it.
Perfect setup. Let's take one more music break. You listen to Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy here on KFAI. We'll be right back, y'all.
Hold it now.
Jam right about now.
Now, it's my junk, it's my holding now, it's my rhyme.
And now I see Adam Young in the place to be. The girls are on me, cause I'm down with my team.
I'm down with my team, and it ain't no baloney. For real, not phony, OE and Rice Aroni.
I come out at night, cause I sleep all day.
Support for KFAI comes from the Cedar Culture Center, presenting the Eli Winter Trio and Luke Schneider Saturday, May 9th. Guitarist Eli Winter and his ensemble trio team up with pedal steel specialist Luke Schneider to blur the lines between folk, rock, and jazz. Techno proficiency meets soulful melodies and psychedelic grooves to create an audio journey through the furthest reaches of your mind. Opening the show is Jonah Hatton. More information about the Eli Winter Trio and Luke Snyder is available at thecedar.org.
I used to sing dirty raps to my East Side fans back then. I knew you couldn't stop this rap. No MC could rock like that. Then the new style came, the bass got deeper. He gave up the mic and bought you a beeper. Do you wanna rap or sell coke? Brothers like you ain't never broke. People wanna say it's just my time. Brothers like me had to work for mine. 8 years on the mic and I'm not joking. Sir Too Short coming straight from Oakland, California, home of the rock. 8 woofers in the trunk beating down the block. Short dog, I'm that rapping man. I said it before and I say it again. Life is too short. Too short. Life is too short. Life is to some people unbearable. Commit suicide and that's terrible. Wasn't much too much or nothing big. If you live my life, you'll be fighting to live. Life is to me my main asset. I've been doing all right.
All right, y'all, welcome back. Beast Rhymes and Democracy. Todd Anthony Shaw celebrated birthday recently, last week, also known as Too Short. Most of his music we cannot play on the show without a lot of beep.
No.
Be a lot of edits.
No.
It'd be redacted documents. Like, what was the most recently most redacted document? We'd be like the Epstein files if, like, up in here with Too Short's music. But shout out to Too Short for just doing that thing, you know, Oakland style. And what's crazy is how the beats, you know, some of that early Beastie Boys, some of those beats that Rick Rubin was putting together, you know, you could hear that on the West Coast before, you know, it with Ice-T and some of these other elders of the game, you know, before Dre kind of just, you know, invented a full G-Funk vibe, even though it kind of has that vibe to it. But it's interesting, the musicality and how before regional identity emerged in hip-hop, there was an appreciation of wherever it was popping up, you know, appreciation without the competitiveness that emerged, which I think that was an important part of hip hop in its evolution, the regional identity. But I think in some ways it became problematic because, you know, folks started flexing and demanding respect from whatever part of the country they were in. So anyway, more about the journey of hip hop. We just love to talk about hip hop, or is that me?
Yeah, well, you know, it's in the title.
It is. Beast Rhymes and Democracy. That's how we roll. That's you what know, we do.
Before we go, I do want to do 2 shout outs. So.
What's that? Go ahead.
Okay. Shout out to Minneapolis, the state, and others, the county, and Met Council, because they helped contribute to a much needed rehab of Little Earth.
Yes.
And
we
that's
were talking about that earlier. Yes.
Yeah, that's big news. That's
investment.
Important.
Did you say $50 million?
$50
investment?
Million. Mm-hmm.
And Little Earth is very unique. There is no other urban Indian housing development like Little Earth. It's very unique in terms of how it came to be with federal dollars and almost identifying the place where Little Earth sits as in its own way. Indian country, which is unique, is not technically, but it is in some unique ways. And I'll have to do a little more research on my end, but I've always heard about the interesting way that Little Earth as a, you know, American Indian housing project at the end of the day, how that came into being and still a center piece of the urban Indian community here.
It was intended to be a temporary spot to address unhoused and housing discrimination in our community, but also to be a culturally connected community. And, you know, it just said temporary housing for our community. However, it became very permanent. And so I don't know what they mean by temporary. However, this was a response to the Indian Relocation Act in 1956, and it has not been updated really since that time. So thank you for all of those who contributed to that much needed rehab, and majority of that funding, $23 million, came from the city and others. So I just want to give a shout out because that is an investment into our community that is much appreciated.
Definitely. And I also give a shout out for all the folks out there in the Twin Cities Native American organizations as we are into Minneapolis American Indian Month.
There you go.
Went to the powwow hosted at the Indian Center on Friday. There'll be activities happening throughout the month. Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy in conjunction with KFAI will be also participating in a Native hip-hop event. Look for that. Indigenous hip-hop event happening May 29th at the Hook and Ladder. Listen in, tune in for that. Exciting. Got some folks on the bill already. Thomas X, Jada Brown, a few others, artists throughout the Twin Cities and elsewhere in the state. So we'll be getting it in end of May.
May 29th at Hook and Ladder. Be on the lookout for the flyers pretty soon.
6 to 10.
It's going to be a fun night. I can't wait.
One more birthday shout out. Master P also celebrated a birthday last week. And Master P, you talk about taking hustler culture and moving it to a whole different level. You know, Master P was in that life and then, you know, understood, you know, speaking of gangsters, we've been using that terminology a lot today, how to like not get robbed and pillaged by the music industry, started his own label, No Limit Records, and the rest is history. He courted and was helpful to Snoop Dogg, his career, and many, many others. New Orleans cat from the Deep South, and he also celebrated a birthday. Does one of his kids? I know. Is that Lil Romeo? Is that one of his kids? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's it.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, is one of his kids? He also had that. Was it Janky Promoters? He had a couple movie endeavors that he did. They were maybe not as successful, but a true entrepreneur in the game. Again, showing the diversity of hip hop all over the country and elsewhere. What are we going to talk about over this next minute before we get up out of here, y'all?
Definitely we should talk about next week. We got to bring this back. But the landmark decision that took place in D.C. last week regarding the Voting Rights Act.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we need a whole show for that.
And, we need a whole show for that. We weren't going to be able to get to it tonight. But the potential risk of losing and directly losing up to 19 representatives.
Seats, right? Yeah.
Congressional seats of black representatives, not of color, black representatives. Mm-hmm. And that's going to change not only the complexion of the Congress, but of politics in our United States. And we're going to, you know, this midterm redistricting and the attack, the attack on the 14th Amendment, 13, 14, and 15, you know, it's very clear about where these parties are. And, you know, for those who try to provide some type of excuse to the right and to MAGA, those actions let you know where they're at. But they're playing harder than we are. And we're going to have to talk about that a little bit more next week.
Yeah, let's do that.
We will.
I'll write it down.
That's right. You can tune in. Check us out next week. Thanks again, listeners. Go Wolves. We'll be back. We out. One love. Up next, Health Notes. We out, y'all.
Listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.